Appreciated agent Eleanor Wood of Spectrum Literary Agency, and to Nancy Berland and her associates for their enthusiasm and hard work. A most heartfelt thanks to the shining lights of my life, my husband John Kendall Canizzo, and my daughter Kathy, whose constant love and support make it all worthwhile. Chapter 1. Iron Bridge. First Scattering Channel. Kamaj Quanta Argali, the governor of Argali Province, shot through the water and broke the surface of the river. Basking in the day's beauty, she tilted her face up to the violet sky. The tiny disk of jewel, the sun, was so bright she didn't dare look near it. Curtains of green and gold light shimmered across the heavens in an aurora visible even in the afternoon. Her bodyguard, Lyode, stood on the bank surveying the area. Lyode's true name was a jumble of words from the ancient language Ayataka, which scholars pronounced as light-emitting diode. No one knew what it meant, though, so they all called her Lyode. Unease prickled Kamaj. She treaded water, her hair swirling around her body, wrapping her slender waist and then letting go. Her reflection showed a young woman with black curls framing a heart-shaped face. She had dark eyes, as did most people in the province of Argali, though hers were larger than usual, with long lashes that right now sparkled with droplets of water. Nothing seemed wrong. Reeds as red as pod plums nodded on the bank, and six-legged lizards scuttled through them, glinting blue and green among the stalks. A few paces behind Lyode, the prismatic forest began. Up the river in the distant north, the peaks of the Rose Quartz Mountains floated like clouds in the haze. She drifted around to the other bank, but saw nothing amiss there either. Tube moss covered the hills in a turquoise carpet, broken by stone outcroppings that gnarled up like the knuckles of a buried giant. What bothered her wasn't unease exactly, more a troubled anticipation. She supposed she should feel guilty about swimming here, but it was hard to summon that response on such a lovely day. The afternoon hummed with life, golden and cool. Kamaj sighed. As much as she enjoyed her swim, invigorated by the chill water and air, she did have her position as governor to consider. Swimming naked, even in this secluded area, hardly qualified as dignified. She glided to the bank and clambered out, reeds slapping against her body. Her bodyguard continued to scan the area. Lyode suddenly stiffened, staring across the water. She reached over her shoulder for the ball bow, strapped to her back. Puzzled, Kamaj glanced back. A cluster of green glass stags had appeared from behind a hill on the other side of the river, each animal with a rider astride its long back. Sun rays splintered against the green scales that covered the stags. Each stood firm on its six legs, neither stamping nor pawing the air. With their iridescent antlers spread to either side of their heads, they shimmered in the blue-tinged sunshine. Their riders were all watching her. "Sweet heiress," Kamaj thought, mortified. She ran up the slope to where she had left her clothes in a pile behind Lyode. Her bodyguard was taking a palm-sized marble ball out of a bag on her belt. She slapped it into the targeting tube of her crossbow, which slid inside an accordion cylinder. Drawing back the bow, Lyode sighted on the watchers across the river. Of course, here in the Argali, Lyode's presence was more an indication of Kamaj's rank than an expectation of danger. Indeed, none of the watchers drew his bow. They looked more intrigued than anything else. One of the younger fellows grinned at Kamaj, his teeth flashing white in the streaming sunshine. "I can't believe this," Kamaj muttered. She stopped behind Lyode and scooped up her clothes. Drawing her tunic over her head, she added, "The Shaverleister." "What?" Lyode said. Kamaj jerked down the tunic, covering herself with soft gray cloth as fast as possible. Lyode stayed in front of her, the bow in her hands poised to shoot. Kamaj counted five riders across the river, all in copper breeches and blue shirts, with belts edged by feathers from the blue-tailed quetzal. One man sat a head taller than the rest. Broad-shouldered and long-legged, he wore a midnight blue cloak with a hood that hid his face. His stag lifted its two front legs and pawed the air, its bi-hooves glinting like glass, though they were a hardier material, horn-like and durable. The man ignored its restless motions, keeping his cowled head turned toward Kamaj. "That's Haverhill Lionstar," Kamaj repeated, as she pulled on her gray leggings. "The tall man on the big green glass?"
"How do you know?"
Lyod asked. "His face is covered."
"Who else is that big? Besides, those riders are wearing Lionstar colors."
Kamaj watched the group set off, cantering into the blue-green hills.
"Ha! You scared them away."
"With 5 against 1, I doubt it." Lyod gave her a dry look. "More likely they left because the show is over."
Kamaj winced.
She hoped her uncle didn't hear of this. As the only incorporated man in Argali, Maxard Argali had governed the province for Kamaj in her youth. In the years since she had become an adult, Kamaj had shouldered the responsibility of leading her people and province, but Maxard, her only living kin, remained a valued advisor. Lionstar's people were the only ones who might reveal her indiscretion, though, and they rarely came to the village. Lionstar had rented the court's palace in the mountains for more than 100 days now, and in that time, no one she knew had seen his face. Why he wanted a ruined palace, she had no idea, given that he refused all visitors. When his emissaries had inquired about it, she and Maxard had been dismayed by the suggestion that they let a stranger take residence in the honored, albeit disintegrating, home of their ancestors. Kamaj still remembered how her face had heated as she listened to the outlanders explain their liege's request. However, no escape had existed from the rent Lionstar's people put forth. The law was clear. She and Maxard had to best his challenge or bow to his authority. Impoverished Argali could never match such an offer. Shovels and awls forged from fine metals, stacks of firewood, golden bridal bells, dew honey and molasses, dried rose leeks, copper wheat, tri-grains and reed flour that poured through your fingers like powdered rubies. So they yielded, and an incensed Maxard had demanded that Lionstar pay a rent of that same worth every 50 days. It was a lien so outrageous, all Argali had feared Lionstar would send his soldiers to renegotiate. Instead, the cowled stranger had paid. With Lyod at her side, Kamaj entered the forest, walking among the trees with tube moss under her bare feet, made her even more aware of her precarious position. Why had he come riding here? Did he also have an interest in her lands? She had invested his rent in machinery and tools for farms in Argali. As much as she disliked depending on a stranger, it was better than seeing her people starve. But she couldn't bear to lose more to him, especially not this forest she loved. So, she would have to inquire into his activities and see what she could discover. The beauty of the forest helped soothe her concern. Drapes of moss hung on the trees, and shadow ferns nodded around their trunks. Argali vines hung everywhere, heavy with the bluish-pink roses that gave her home its name. Argali. It meant vine rose in Iotica. At least, most scholars translated it as rose. One fellow insisted it meant resonance. He also claimed they misspelled Kamaj's middle name, Quanta, an Iotica word with no known translation. The name Kamaj came from the Iotica word for bound. So if this odd scholar was correct, her name meant bound quantum resonance. She smiled at the absurdity. Rose made more sense, of course. The vibrant life in the autumnal woods cheered Kamaj. Camouflaged among the roses, puff lizards swelled out their red sacks. A rustling breeze let a sunbeam slant through the forest, making the scale bark and filmy scale leaves on the trees sparkle. Then the ray vanished, and the forest returned to its dusky violet shadows. A thorn bat whizzed by, wings beating furiously. It homed in on a lizard and stabbed its needled beak into the red sack. As the puff deflated with a whoosh of air, the lizard scrambled away, leaving the disgruntled thorn bat to dart on without its prey. Powdered scales drifted across Kamaj's arm. She wondered why people had no scales. The inconsistency had always puzzled her. Since her early childhood. Most everything else on Balumil, the world, had them. Scaled tree roots, swollen with moisture, churned the soil. The trees grew slowly, converting water into stored energy to use during the long summer droughts and endless winter snows. Unlike people, who fought to survive throughout the grueling year, seasonal plants grew only in the gentler spring and autumn.